push the button.
Well, he puts another word in there, but.
I do, but I'm considering. Anyway, we're doing those things and I've seen huge improvements already. Manual review for out of state titles is a significant issue and we're working on that as well too. A lot of it's been scanning and once we can get the scanning thing taken care of, we'll be fine. Allison Emley is the supervisor over miscellaneous services. And that was, we're lucky to get her under us and we're excited about it because there's a lot of things that they can do through insufficiency of evidence of ownership packets, through other things, bin installs that are going to be affected us all, including the tow industry. I know you're probably the only person that really cares about that, but we're tackling those problems as we go. We're looking forward to it. I've already seen huge improvements on those sides and we're going to continue to look at doing things better or differently if we can. I don't like to reinvent the wheel, but our wheel needs some reinventing.
Just don't bring in a casket.
This is not really to tout my horn or anything like that. But I will say this last little while that, that the MVD has been involved on our side from the recycling side, we have seen some monster changes, right? And so, and we can tell when the changes are happening, right? Because it affects flows, right? And so where it affects flows is, when things are being not done right, flow is really coming in and paperwork is not so clear, right? I think that what the MVD is doing now, which I'm actually pretty excited about because we always get the calls, our stuff is being delayed a little bit. Let me back up and just reiterate that point. It's not because of the MVD, it's proper paperwork on their side and how they're doing it and how they're being checked, which in theory is going to come back with us and help us all the way around in our facilities and all other auto recycling facilities, right? And so it's been a big help with me and the MVD and our people that are running the title side. We've seen huge improvements at stuff that's taking us forever to get paperwork back so we can make the dismantle call. As everybody knows, real estate here is not cheap and vehicles take up a lot of real estate, especially ones where you're talking of values of less than $300 or so on vehicles, right? So when we look at the amount of vehicles that we're rolling through now and the amount of space that they take, we are seeing some major improvements that way. And I think our team's commitment with the MVD and getting them out information so they have it from our group, that's been really received well on both ends. So we've just seen a lot of really positive things on our side, which for years upon years, we struggled to have that. And I think we had some roadblocks, but things are working out really well.
Just FYI, from this point on, I failed to notice this. We're recording this. So when you address, make sure you say, Chris Mantis, whatever, and then I'm Alan Shinney with the Tax Commission.
Gus Paulus's kid, shortest kid in the room.
That's okay. Anyway, I am totally confident with these two ladies that we will be able to be consistent, and if there's a better way to do it, we will do it. So I'm very pleased to have both of them on our team, and we're going to take the bull by the horns. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris, for your comments there. And yeah. Alan, we appreciate what you're doing. I think this is a license these dealers. We want to be your poster children. I mean, we appreciate that. This ability to work together is so imperative when you think what's happening in IC and other states and challenges they're having. You take the approach to push the button. But we don't want to abuse that. We appreciate that. And when it is abused, maybe communication or some misunderstanding, it's abused, please let us know so we can step up to it immediately. And Craig, we can do our own policing. We'll try to put this thing where it needs to be. So it makes you shine for you're willing to take a bet on us. So we appreciate that. MBED market analysis.
Okay.
Did you get a
day? Larry Ball, Director of Motor Vehicle Enforcement. We have submitted for a market analysis in an effort to keep our employees. We are very underpaid compared to any other law enforcement agency. So we have, they are in the process now of looking at it. When there's three outcomes is no, yes, but no money, or yes, we'll take care of it. So two out of three are bad.
Well, but at least they're allies.
Yeah, they're allies. They now have some more information on it also.
Yeah, the real issue is going to be with their acquisition. We get a word back from Laren Glenn today?
I have not heard back from him yet.
So we know the job, our attorney. A lot of things are going to be based on our attorney that we're hiring that's going to prosecute NBD cases. And just so you know, the vision is that we're the DMV police as well. So that's why we have these other people on staff that are going to help us get a better picture of filing process, all of the above. So we can just dot the I's and cross the T's, because I think that's important. This attorney project is going to help us significantly. And it really comes down to, if we need to get modifications done to statutes, that's why we have this board. So we need to be able to go to Craig's group, Wayne's group, or all of the above as a board recommendation, because the tax commission only allows, I believe, two presentation of bills a year. And of course, it's always going to come under the umbrella of tax issues first. So we really rely and depend on the strength of this board to get things done. So I greatly appreciate that. With that being said, it really would come time with, the Highway Patrol across the board got $10 an hour raises for their staff. We didn't get anywhere near that. And so an entry-level trooper, you're talking just a trooper, the same ones that gave you a ticket, those guys? They got $10 an hour raises, $10. That's a lot of money. We are really at our ropes in with the efficiency and where we are at staff line that we will really need the support of the board to address a increase in temporary permit costs. We've had it that low for a long time, like since 2009. And we have reclassified jobs left and right. And we're really two ropes in. We still have had savings, but we don't know what the forecast really is going to be with how much the attorney is going to cost, because we did get a mid-level attorney. We didn't get an entry-level attorney. And it's $250,000 a year on my budget. So with that being said, there's always a way that if the attorney is a good bang for a buck, we look at reducing officer staff, because officers, this is where I get myself in trouble with the officers. They cost me a ton of money because I have to pay into a different pension. I have to pay into supplies, training, all of the above, where I can hire support staff that can do a lot of the work, and we can use like a VA system where you have a kind of like the federal system where you have business analysts preparing the cases, and you have the law enforcement side, and that's what we've done. So we went from 25 sworn officers, right now we have 17, right?
17.
So that's a big savings. That's how we've been able to do the things, but we're really to the point of no return. We've done a lot of DMV assignments, and we didn't get any FTEs, which is employees, to do that. So we're really kind of at a crossroads where we're watching. But it definitely could be a concern that we move forward, that we need to. And most of the dealers that I've done like sample questionnaires to have supported raising temporary permits. With that being said, the governor's office has always been against those type of things, because it comes down to, I know that the dealers don't quote unquote pay it, but it's still it's picked up by the consumer. So just a thought, and we'll keep you posted on that through the board meetings, and then we'll go from there.
Alan?
Yes, sir.
Clint Martin here with a question. Do you have an anticipated increase at this point so we can start mulling it over?
We're really hoping. I mean, really, like I said, the AG's office for their investigators, they got a 26% pay increase. And I want to make it clear to you guys, I am not advocating that, okay? I really believe that that's ridiculous, and I thought that was excessive, but that's what they got. And I don't know what the percentage was for the Highway Patrol. I mean, two and a half years ago, we were talking about defunding the police, and now we're paying a record amount of money for those type of jobs. And I've had meeting after meeting with Scott Smith, and his position has been like, well, if we lose guys, we lose guys. But keep in mind, our job is pretty training and tech savvy specific, that it's hard for me to train new guys. and we've done a pretty good job on it, but I think outside of Larry Cole and maybe a couple guys that you've seen some mistakes on attrition and guys coming into the system that they don't know the answers. So, and we're not the only department that has that problem. Trust me. There's recruitment problems all over. I mean, no one wants to be police officers anymore because of all of the above. Oh, public perception, pay, risk. You could get sued as a police officer and lose all your house. You know, they could sue you for civil liability. There's lots of different variables that go into it that don't. I could get sued for one of my officers saying, making a bad decision, saying that I failed to train them. And we do a really good job of making sure that doesn't happen, but it's getting more difficult every year. Yes.
I just make a comment. I know years ago, and Wayne and I were working on that. So you don't have to go to the legislature every time with the temporary permit. And isn't there some leeway there that you
we're at the top? We have been broke since 2015.
Yeah.
Well, this staff, you have to record, but I have an idea of how you can get a few more dollars. But that's a little bit facetious.
Oh, no.
There's a few more dollars, you can just raise the fee for licensing.
Like I said, I'm actually a less government person, so I really try to keep that in mind. I can't change my stripes for certain things, but it is about competitiveness. And we still are below, and I think we'll always be below, because my recruiting basis is based on, do you want to fight domestic violences or do you want to do Title III? And so I am going to get certain kinds of people, but there's no doubt that I can't afford. I really prefer to hire people with education. Like, I've noticed the difference with people with bachelor's degrees. They do a better case. We get less cases declined. So I get what you get, what you pay for, is what I'm trying to say. But it's getting to a point where I differentiate from what Larry thinks per se, that I think we would get better if I hire better people and had less of them. But it's we're getting to the fine points there.
We're at the line.
So that's my question. Can 17 cover what you your needs?
Yeah, 17. We've been doing a great job. In fact, just so you know, I just checked the numbers before we came down here. So give you perspective. In 2016, when I took over, MPD was just under 3,000 cases investigated. We're going to be 10,000 this year. Now, some of that's been title stuff and DMV assist that, to be frank with you, I don't mean to hurt anyone's feelings, but if we would have taken it, they would have had no resolution. So we are getting titles right now from dealers all over the state that have been, that we issued titles, some of them 18 months ago, right? 18 months ago. And those titles just came from the state. Well, the ramifications of if we wouldn't have issued those titles, those cars would have been on your lot for 18 months, or you would have had been issuing temporary permits. And we knew that the dealers were telling us the truth. We could check the TLR reports. We have enough great DMV employees around us that we were able to make a judgment decision and issue. Now, I believe that we've issued over 5,000 titles in the last 18 months, right?
That's what I've heard.
Okay. We've only had three that have gone bad. And all three of those we resolved through citation. So last time I checked, those are pretty good percentage odds of just taking care of business. We have the authority by being police officers here to issue summons and citations if someone lies to us. And that's why we have them do the TC 451.1. So it is what it is. I'm pretty proud of those numbers. And we're going to continue. I thought by now that it would be going down, but is it going down? Mm-hmm. This is Morgan Ludwig. She's our acting MBD office manager. What, just like went blank there. And she's done an outstanding job filling in for Maria. Yes, sir.
One more question. So you don't have a proposal yet, like we need to raise it $3 per temporary permit, or we need to raise it 10%. The math is not ready yet.
I'd probably work with Wayne and Craig and look at what we did before to kind of get a ballpark. Because, I mean, you're talking 2008-ish is when we did that.
Yeah, but I thought, correct me, Wayne, help me on this one. I thought when we did that, and I think Commissioner Johnson was the chair, we were able to move that so we didn't have to go every time to the legislature. We gave it that span, but you're saying we're hitting the top.
We're at the top.
Yeah, they gave us the top, and we're at the top. When we thought the COVID was going to be a problem, we got it. We bumped it up to the top.
Yeah. is it $12.16, right?
Uh-huh.
$12.16 right now.
And just so you know, Utah's the lowest in the region for temporary permit.
Do you anticipate like $2 more, like 10% more, like?
We gotta move it to 15 or 16, because that's too best.
If they gave us the range like we had before, that would be great. We cannot, look, I believe in disclosure, we've been rolling over $500,000 a year. So right now, we used to be a basic, I used to call them taxes spend guys. So we would go out shopping the last quarter because we had money. We have not done that. So we don't have $100,000 briefcases sitting in my office that we've never opened up. We have been rolling that over because when you guys got it changed before, I'm talking Wayne and Craig, the new and used industry, that we were allowed to roll that over for a rainy day fund, that because if we go into a recession, we are not funded by the general fund, we're funded by that money. So where people would be getting rifted, we were able, we have enough, we have over $5 million. That's how much we've saved. I'm proud of that. I mean, that's how much money is on our account. And they try to steal it, you know that. They try to take our money. And we're like, oh no. So we've been very sufficient. I just don't know what the change is. We rolled over 500,000 last year. That was the lowest we've done in a while. But we're just looking at it, trying to, it was 250,000 for an attorney is quite a big chunk of that. And then the increases that we did get, we forecasted, and I think our guys got 8.5% this last year. And it still doesn't even bring us up to entry level. The highway patrol is $30 an hour now. We have more than half my staff below $30 now, more than half. It's like almost 70%.
And the problem with hiring new people in the standard along for a long time, as long as I've been here, it takes a minimum of 5 years to become efficient at what we do.
Question, Cliff Schneider. If we raise the permit fee for that, will all of that money go to wages? I mean, can they?
It goes operating expenses. So yes, the majority of our budget is
okay. Staff. So it can't somehow get diverted somewhere else.
I would think that those two gentlemen could answer that question better than me.
It's always a possibility, but as he just explained, it's money dedicated for operations.
Okay.
It's different than most government appropriations, because the legislature will appropriate that money for other divisions. This one is self-sufficient by the funding of the dealers for that. And that goes back when it used to be Motor Vehicle Administration before it was the Enforcement Division, is when that all kind of changed the money.
We just wouldn't like that to be appropriated at different ways. And so we would be involved at that point.
I wouldn't speak for Commissioner Valentine, but I've had discussions with him that to him that's the right way to fund divisions of government, to have them be self-sustaining in a lot of cases. And I'm not quoting him, just conversation.
I mean, the reality says the last two of our top employees, one was just offered an $8,000 signing bonus and a $10 an hour raise to go to the Highway Patrol. That's another state agency. It's only one of our best guys. I mean, I can't do that. And I don't even think I should be allowed to do that. I would never ask for that. I don't believe in giving someone a hiring bonus to come do a job that they're really already commissioned to do, but that's what they're doing right now. Corrections sent out letters to retired people offering them a ton of money to our employees. So three of my employees got letters from Corrections offering them a ton of money to come work for them.
It was from the governor's office.
From the governor's office.
It wasn't from Corrections. It was from the governor's office.
I was very upset about that.
It wasn't detailed. You know, make some noise.
I did.
So essentially, you're giving us a warning. You don't have a proposal today. You're just giving us a warning.
I thought it was coming.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's see where we end up with this analysis, market analysis. Please keep us posted on that. We can try to be an advocate. And then I would speak up and say, we believe your people should be properly remunerated for what they do. You mean you can't be out here by yourself, or you can't hire the kind of people you need and do what you need to do. But the next question I have is, we talked about this attorney for a long time. Is this done?
No, they're having a tough time getting applicants.
We had no applicants in the last pool, so we redid it. And the reason for is now it's 2022, like I told you. So all attorneys want to work from home. They want to work remote.
Yeah.
So this last thing, it said you had to go down to 5300 South to be in the office. So I'm like, I read this thing. I told Larry, we're going to get no applicants. So I called their boss and I said,
this is ridiculous. None of your employees are working in the office. We can't have you make an announcement like this. We're not going to get any applicants. So when we change that, we have four, and I don't know what the status is. We just closed last Friday, right?
Yeah, closed last Friday, and Larry's out of the office, so we won't know.
So we're doing everything we can to, that attorney is going to be the biggest changer.
Do not take a shortcut. I mean, you just gone through all this to get somebody. Let's don't do this in a halfway situation. You want somebody that can really cover your need. I don't know you. I don't know what you're paying him, but you budgeted. But know what you're paying him, but you need to get somebody that's effective for you, that takes heat off of you, and can be push those buttons appropriately.
Well, shamefully, I agree with everything you're saying, but just keep in mind that the painful reality is I have to represent the whole department now. It's not just about officers. I have great support staff, as I've introduced to you today, that my goal is to take care of them too, so they don't want to leave us. And we've done that. And if there's ways that I can do that, I'm going to do that. They're part of us, and I'm going to take care of them too. And I make this the best place on everyone water. Yes.
I think we buy into that, Alan. I believe that. That's your MO. But you just said it takes, when you hire a new boy, it takes 5 years for him to be basically effective. You want to get somebody here that can hit the ground running, and you don't have to spend a lot of money and spend how many years making it.
Oh, it's a game changer, just so you know. One of my best friends that I played high school sports with is the county attorney in Weber County. They have 7 vacancies right now that can't fill. And that's the reality of public service, not just public safety, that they're not competitive enough that they feel like they can get more money on unemployment, or they could do freelance, like Kirk Ferguson's freelance, and making a ton of money by writing briefs for big firms and working from home. So, and I know that Tim Gill's office is short, I think I heard, 13 attorneys. So they're doing the same thing that law enforcement is doing. They're taking each other's staff and giving them more money, and then they have vacancies. And then it's a never-ending cycle.
We do that in the car business. We trade off. Next thing.
So this analysis that you're doing could have a time frame on it, because the session's going to start in 2 months.
That's why we're bringing it up.
And so my concern is, if this takes 90 days, it's too late. And so you guys have that spread like we had before. So if that spread goes, you know, from this point down to this point, that's discretionary. You don't have to use it. You put that off and not using it in times when you didn't need it. So does the spread need to happen in this legislative session, or will this be able to be into a bill and see how that works? Because it's going to take 60, 90 days. Do you have any idea on
that? I would tell you, seriously, just my opinion from going through this before, I bet it takes them a year.
Well, then that's not going to solve your,
I mean, is it worth just raising the cap $4 more to $16.50?
But it's still less.
I think that we would have a problem raising the cap right now because of our savings that we have, that I think that they would say that, but I don't know.
Do you just need someone to sponsor the bill? What's that? Or do we just need someone to sponsor the bill?
Well, I think it's got to go to a tax commission bill.
The question is, what do you raise it to? That would be
$16.50.
Yeah, but I mean, Howard, I don't understand the math. How did you pick that number? What the one?
Let's just use the last breath. What was the last spread that we did with inflation? We did that.
Or just adjust for inflation. That would be a simple special.
I'm just concerned that you can't take the hit. We are going into a recession, as we know. You know, I think you've been artificially constraining because we have to certain vehicles because of supply. I think that's going to catch up. And, you know, but then you got the recession. So I don't know that it's going to be much better than it is now. And now you're $10 an hour under. That's problematic.
I mean, is it worth trying to get just an adjustment for inflation this legislative cycle? Is that a reasonable ask?
There's so much money out there in the budget.
So do you think it's reasonable?
I
and do you think that's
reasonable? Well, just remember, it's not, that's, when you say it's in the budget, we're not part of the general fund. No, these guys are, we're not.
No, I know, but I don't. I mean, here's the industry. You guys, gals, you're in the industry. for the industry. We can't afford not to have these guys do what they do.
You can come up with the reasons why you can logically explain that to legislators to say, here's what we're doing. Here's what we think as an industry.
Yeah.
Coming up with those numbers. And then that can be looked at following session with the study, because it's going to take a year anyway. Then we can, and maybe at least go higher than what we're asking. This is kind of a fail-safe initial piece to do that with the understanding that we'll come back next year, give you numbers and adjust for it. And now I think that could be done legislatively.
What do you think the spread needs to be at? 12, would you say?
I like the number that he said. That he, I think 1650 is reasonable. And then we could gauge it. I'm not advocating we have to raise it right now, because we want to know what the analysis is going to say and what's going to happen.
If we don't have to raise it, it is the 16.
Yeah, it'd be great if that's what we can do.
If that's the cap, then you've got the option, but not the obligation.
You got to remember, nothing's going to go into effect because it's a tax issue. The effective date is going to be July 1 fiscal.
And that'd be fine.
2023.
Correct. Not going to be effective till.
Maybe we should get this analysis, market analysis, and then see what we think from there. But how they open the door, they're going to shut the door on us. Then let's go get some customers like Ibsen and Wilson and some others, and we start.
But it's going to take a year to do the analysis. So we need to get something done.
You think
right now?
I think it'll take a year. The only worry I would have is that if we sit back and don't do anything, they're going to.
That could take another year
on top of that, and then we'll be in trouble.
I mean, there's an adjustment for inflation. There's also an adjustment for the lack of inventory. And that's been huge. Market conditions.
You're really talking a long time, because by the time you get the analysis, then the legislation, and then
July, you're talking a year and a half.
Well, there's some other things like on the. In the wake that, you know, technology costs money. We're gonna change the temporary permits. That's gonna cost us money. There's no doubt. There's no denying that. It's the right thing to do, because it's just going to be better. It's going to give law enforcement security that the vehicle's going to be, because it'll be live data going from the time for the dealer issuing the permit to being in the system, which now takes 45 days, and it never is in the system. It's not in the system until it clears.
Until the plates are issued. Yeah.
Now it'll be attached to the VIN number, and it'll be instant once we get that. I mean, that's going to be a game changer. It'll be great. So, but that costs money. There's a couple other things that we're working on to make titling and plating and all of the above through MED better. Everything costs money now. It's like, just sit there like going, and look, I know that you don't care, but I look at our budget, that costs me money. And I'm like, they're going, you know, we got to cover those things.
Invaders is going through a major upgrade in 23. Major upgrade. So.
Well. From my perspective, it would be very simple. It could be done within one day. Just find out what the annual inflation rate was since we did it last. Add that up, compound it, do a math problem. I mean, it's like a fifth grade math problem. And let's go to the legislator with the math problem to say, this is what we'd like to increase this cycle. See if we can get someone to sponsor the bill. They can always say no, but we can at least try it.
I think that you guys could probably start the conversation with the commission chair and see what he does. Because it really comes down to advocating the services that we provided. When I've been here 23 years, I was a lieutenant in 2010 until I became the director in 2016. I will tell you this, the industry is better served by the changes we've made, because we have, instead of going out and getting abandoned stolen cars, we've been doing our resources with shaking the vitality of the industry versus just doing things that were fun, like cop things that guys want to do that are fun. We've been doing things and bringing it back into the industry, like helping get titles, knowing how to forecast. We would have been able to predict COVID. You know, I mean, if we weren't in place for some of the changes we made, we wouldn't have been able to help you guys. And those are those things that we had to know, and we knew it for being in the dealerships by the inspections. We require our guys to be in the dealerships. We have rapport with the board now, where it's not just lip service. Those are all things that have transpired into a healthy car industry. And I honestly believe that if we have things run amok, we're in a better position now to deal with the problem people immediately and protect the citizens of the city. And I know that's true.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, having been recipient of some of your title help things over the last few years, would have been very expensive if they'd gotten the other way. So.
Why don't we ask you to take this under wing and find out what that inflation amount would be, just so we know it. Let's let you work that number up for us. What would it be if we just were parity based on what it'd be with inflation? And then I think we need to act on something here.
Well, would you be comfortable with a motion, Mr. Chairman?
I would be very comfortable with a motion.
So I would like to make a motion that we put together an analysis based on inflation since the last change was made, and solicit help from both the new and used car associations to find a senator or representative to sponsor legislation for this cycle, if possible, to increase the temporary.
Will you discussion on it?
I mentioned one thing is that as we go through, you know, the chain of command, Scott Smith, and Commissioner Valentine, I think we got to loop them in here. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
We do want to make that.
Yeah. So let's amend that and add that as part of the mayor.
Are we clear on that amendment? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Any opposed to that? Thank you. Appreciate that. Well, that's going to take a lot more discussion with that. Let's move into the next item, which is sometimes the elephant in the room. What's taking place on pending legislation?
Craig, Wayne, we have anything we're hearing on pending legislation at all?
Well, we got the thing that and actually Sheen talked to us. This is we got this from Jason Gardner, October 12th. This is the rule that we've been working on two years, and so we've reviewed this, but we just got to look at just a little bit more. And what happens is that the governor has sent out a memo or directive to all the agencies he wants to cut stuff, government regulations. And so, and I've spoken to Jason about a week and a half ago, so some of the changes in this draft. This has to do with vehicles and transit, we talked about. So advertising statute and rule. And Wayne worked on it, we worked on it, Wayne and Adam. And so some of this is stylistic, meaning the governor wants to cut regulations. So they're changing the statutes, just the rule just a little bit to conform a little bit. And our concern is, I have to read about this. We have to keep this stuff. We're not just throwing stuff out because we want a 10% reduction. Okay, let's just open the jail. Let's take 10% of the stop signs down. And, you know, that stuff's not important. So this is part of that. Wayne, I don't know if you've seen this last version.
Yeah, so if you go back to some of the prior advisory board meetings, we went and walked through a lot of this rule stuff that came from Jason. So a lot of it's in there. There have been some, Craig said, the old stylistic changes because attorneys always change wording on how that comes together. This is pretty close to what we discussed. I mean, I remember 2-3 board meetings ago, something like it was after the session last year. We went through this and we've been working on that. I think the governor's right in doing less regulations, but I also think that we need to have that balance with our industry to make sure we don't give opportunities for people who are a little bit on the edge, if you will, I'll say it politically correct, I hope, that will give them an opportunity to take advantage, because that can be a real enemy to us as our industry. So I think we need to create some real good balance. And I talked to Jason specifically about that, to go through this rulemaking process, because the way he was originally talking after discussing with the governor, maybe we just need to get rid of all of it. I said, no. I said, this, we can't get rid of this. There's some things in there that we just need to keep in place.
So, and he did do some things that we like, for example. And if you look at it, I actually had to talk to Jason about it so that I could understand. So this is in one section. I will be really quick, Steve. The following fees are not required to be included in the advertised price that the customer must pay for the motor vehicle, either documentary service fees, that's out. And here's a key word. If optional, charges or undercoating, rust proofing. Then they've added these words in: window etching, window tint, alarm systems,
or any other similar items. So if you're gonna, if those aren't optimal, you gotta advertise, which is awesome. If they're optional, then you don't. But then we want every dealer to know that's an auction, and your customers need to know it's an auction. So there are some enhancements that have been put in here that we really like.
It boils down to, so if you're going to do an ad and the window etching's on there, it should be included in the price tab. Or any other bed spray, whatever it is. If there's no option to take it off, then it should be included in the price of the advertising. That was universal for the surveys we did and working with the used car dealer board and others over the past. And everybody's in consensus with that, that it makes sense to do that because that gives a consumer the right to know what isn't optional and what is not optional.
Okay. Thank you.
I did get some counsel from Commissioner Valentine. The governor's whole direction on this was he didn't want things that were more restrictive than the law. So I'm talking about 41.3210. They believe that some of the language in the rules contradicted the law and they didn't support each other. So he wanted to avoid that at all costs.
Those prohibitive acts in 41.3210 have not been reviewed in a long.
Anything else? Okay, let's talk about the Highway Patrol, what they're trying to do.
Okay, so Thursday I received an email.
Are we going to do a drum roll first?
Oh, yep. Yeah. I received an email on Thursday forwarded to me from a Highway Patrol sergeant from the Capitol. And they wanted us to go out and do a detail with them. And what they told us was that they have been out on their own looking at frontline vehicles of new and used dealerships. And they have found that 4.2% of all new vehicles and 38.6% of all used vehicles are not safe for the road. And they wanted MVED to go with them and start writing tickets to the dealers for selling unsafe. Needless to say, that lasted about 2 seconds in my queue. And I said, no. We will not do that, but that's just to show you what the Highway Patrol is looking at, trying to make themselves look good or get the safety inspection program back. And they wanted us to be the bad guys, and we refused. But that's something that you guys need to be aware of, that they're doing. These guys are Capitol police officers out there looking at your dealership.
How are new cars on state?
Good question.
Window tint, that's illegal.
I think we should just crush them all and send them all by
place. I don't know what it could be. We don't know what that means.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, if they're not driving it, they haven't checked in ball joints or rotors. Yeah. Safety inspection's not even a play. What are they talking about? Fender flares? Too big of tires? I don't know what.
Yeah, I mean, what are they looking at? I'm actually inspecting.
The email didn't say anything about exactly what they looked at. It just said that he and his small group went out and started looking. They looked at 1,000 vehicles, and this is what they found, and they want us to go write the tickets for them.
This is not the first time they've done that. They did that before, and it was all focused on doing an inspection from the curb without walking on the lot, and most of it had to do with window tinting, tires, and lip kits.
And the target back then was Watts Automotive. These guys, it must be somewhere in Salt Lake City, because these guys are Capitol guys.
Well, they gave the numbers. How many? They checked. It was something like 55 dealerships.
Yeah, they checked 55 dealerships, 5 new, 50 used, 1,000 vehicles.
So, could our response be, well, if we had safety inspection with new registered, this probably wouldn't happen. And how can you help us with that? Give back the money.
Because just based on things that we've been told, this isn't an effort to help the dealers.
Well, I'm on record saying this. So I was in a committee meeting for law enforcement, and this topic got brought up, and I flipped. I told them dealers want a safety inspection. You guys took it away, and I boldly said I'm not aware of any dealer that would sell an unsafe vehicle unless if they put a temporary permit on. Now, everyone knows they don't understand that part of the statute, that if a dealer sells a car, wholesale to the public, whatever you want to call it, tax tow away, that they don't issue permit, there's that they're acknowledging that the vehicle's probably got issues, and that's why they do that. They say, well, they can't do that. And they go, they've been doing that forever. And then I asked them, and Rapich was in the room, I said, why aren't you targeting the people on KSL that are selling cars that are unsafe? And we can't go there.
Well, I point to you on that one. period. Big point.
Why can't?
They I'm just telling you, this is my opinion. They are presenting that dealers in the state of Utah are selling unsafe cars. And I just was not happy about that at all.
Yeah, and then I want a little more intel about that report.
We don't know.
I would imagine it's going to the administration I would control, because there's a meeting coming up for the law enforcement committee, and I guarantee I'll be there. And I'm sure it'll get brought up.
Is it worth a phone call to ask them what their motive is? Like why they would spend time to check 1,000 cars? That's not making you something you do in an afternoon. What's
well, maybe they should be on the I-15 keeping all the people driving 90 miles an hour. Right.
Yeah, I would have to agree. What's their motive? Yeah, I would have to agree with you. There's probably more cars on KSL than I think there should be. Period.
It's got to remember those are one and two seasons. Yeah. Here they can look at 50 cars now.
Yeah. Well,
apparently, the way they're looking at it, they just look at the pictures on KSL.
It's easier that way. It's
very they don't weird. Have to go see the
it's
cars.
Easier, the it's picture. Easier to get in your car.
I bet you that's what they did.
I know Wayne and Craig both know more about this than I did, but I did read it. When they made the original change where I was. Safe inspection went away, they were commissioned and given $1 per registration to investigate accidents for safety violations and issue citations. And last I heard, they had written none. But they got on the news media and said that bad fatal by Strawberry was done by a car sold by a dealership. And when I checked, it was sold 8 months ago. But that's what they said on the news. So it's about the presentation, but I know our staff isn't going to allow anybody to present to any committee that dealers are selling unsafe cars.
The concern about that is these guys and gals, they have to have insurance, they are bonded. The merchantability under the commerce statutes have to come into play as well. They're knowingly, I don't know anybody. Who's going to sell an unsafe vehicle? That's just craziness.
Particularly a new car.
Oh, yeah. Particularly a new
car. I'm sure the manufacturers would like to know what cars don't comply.
How many new cars were not compliant? 40. Two out of how many?
Yeah, let me see. I got it right here. It is, they checked 188 and 8 of them were in violation. No, 8 of them had 11 violations. So some of the cars had more than one violation.
That's a misleading stat.
Does it specify that what the violation is?
No. No, it says in used cars, they checked 714, 276 cars were found in violation with 338 violations. But it doesn't go into any detail. They didn't give us any more than that. They just asked our guy to tell them, let's go write some tickets.
I think the whole presentation that we are concerned about is we think that we need to be unified and saying that dealers want safety inspection.
Uh-huh.
They should use us to get it back instead of using us to argue for it. I just think that's in our best.
Yeah, they're trying to blame you for not having it so they can get it back when it's totally false.
I will just tell you, there's two people in this room because we're senior who fought so hard for so long, for so many years, to keep safety inspection. Back to Dan Eastman, back to Scott Duncan, back. We just keep going back. Wayne Richards, I mean, all those guys, legislators, Chuck Peterson, even, I think.
Yes. That's way back.
Way back.
I remember a specific conversation I had with you on the phone saying it will never pass. Does that sound familiar?
Yep.
It did pass.
Yep.
Because it was about the money, not safety.
That's true.
It's about the money, not safety. So I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, please.
Would it be appropriate for this advisory board to invite somebody for public safety to come and address that with this group instead of having hearsay letters, discussions, whatever? Let's get down to the facts and how we can work together rather than shooting volleys over each other's fences.
Your thoughts?
Is that a good idea or not?
I don't want to have anything to do with that, to be honest with you, because the bottom line is if I start getting myself legislatively responsible for, I'm not trained to know what a safe vehicle is. I go and look at a car tire and say, those tires, I tell my kids, those tires need to be replaced. But I don't know, it's subjective. And I don't think that's not a law enforcement capacity.
What about us doing it? Why don't we let us talk about that?
On the association.
Yeah. Why don't we move on then? Let's talk about Senator Wilson and what took place there. I'm not aware of that.
This is Alan.
Yeah, I'm working with, I got a phone call from Cache County Attorney's Office over, they're fed up with all these non-LLC vehicles in our state. And obviously, Cache County is like Washington County. It's a bordering county. And it's just a different, they have Idaho plates, you guys probably have Nevada plates. And their attorney up there won't prosecute them because of some of the, he's telling me that the, we need a lodgement. And it's the definition of residency and domicile and how long the vehicle's here, I think. Because right now the statute reads, if, let's say I own a car in Idaho, I live in Idaho and my son and his wife moved to Utah. If I own the car, they could drive that car in Utah indefinitely because I own it. And it's not about how long it's here per se. If it has to leave back to Idaho, a lot of people think the county attorney's office is going to prosecute it. And I know they're a little bit different scenario, but the LLC problem in Montana is really getting out of hand. It used to only be for RVs and high-end cars. And now it's like, I'm getting calls on this all the time. It's like, why would you consciously want to do a $10,000 car in an LLC up in Montana? It's really, you're talking, Utah's taxation laws and registration are some of the fairest in the region. It's only about the property tax part that people are, you know, it's just an avalanche of effective bad information that they're doing the Montana thing, because it only works on RVs and boats. It's really not for cars, but it's really a problem.
The age-based fee just took that out, took all the links out.
So what is it on RVs?
It's property. It's
the sales tax.
It's not just the sales tax, it's the property tax.
Yeah, but we changed, these guys changed that. So a couple of years, about 3 years ago, it sounds like we moved. There were three things that were not included in the age-based fees. One of them was motor homes, the special equipment like pear cherry pickers and that sort of thing. The third one is on houseboats in Grand County, basically. So from the RV Association side, we changed that. We worked with all 29 county assessors. Seems like there's 49. 29 county assessors to change. We did research on every county, and there was only two counties that received less revenue. But we did an age-based fee on that for motor homes. Travel trailers were only included. It was just the motor home site. There was only two counties that weren't held fully accountable in the money they received. Both county attorneys said, I would love to have a change to an age-based fee that will save me at least one FTE, full-time employed person, to do that. So we're fine with getting rid of the fee in lieu of the tax as opposed to the age-based fee. And so that's changed about 3 years ago. So that amount, some of those went from tens of thousands of dollars down to hundreds of dollars. The thing that did change was that the assessment became effective on new RVs, new motor homes, whereas before they were exempt the first year. So I talked with Senator Bramble at length about this. He had complaints from some of his constituents because he was the sponsor. And people were complaining that they had to pay, you know, $50 or $100 or $200 more for their aid because they were, they're 3 year increments. So somewhere you always, somebody's always going to pay a little more. And he said, well, you're telling me you don't want to change because it's less than the amount of a tank of gas for your motorhome. So you want to change the law. So he worked pretty good with his constituents to help them understand exactly how that went. And for the last, what, year and a half, 2 years, we've had no complaints about that, just like it did in. It was the same pattern we saw when we changed it on cars. You know, first year or two, there were complaints. After that, it just, that is how it was. And like you said, it's one of the least amount of fees. So why they're still going to Montana for that?
It's probably just misinformation. Hasn't the cause and effect hasn't taken place yet.
Yeah.
But outside
and
of that
law was enhanced a couple of years ago too for when they couldn't do.
But like, it doesn't help when they give them I don't know this is happening, I just hear it. If the RV dealers are telling them how to set up an LLC in Montana, that's not good for Utah.
I'll just tell you a report on that. The RV dealers hate doing that. They will tell them they can't do it. And if they do it, they're going to get caught and receive fines and have their vehicles impounded. And they do not, the industry does not want to do the Montana LLC.
So I'll keep you posted on the Senator Wilson thing, because
he's, and he obviously understands, and he lives in that county, so he, he'll definitely want to do something about it.
Super. Salvage vehicle issue.
We've come up, we had a case recently, this will affect dealers, we're fighting the process right now, but we have a case where a dealer sold a vehicle. The customer found out that somewhere down the line it would, had a salvage history, total loss history. And the Utah County Attorney's Office is going to prosecute the dealer, even though the dealer got the vehicle in a clean title and sold it on a clean title. They said because it has a salvage history, the dealer should have known it, and the dealer is going to be charged criminally with any misdemeanor.
We're going to write a letter on the dealer's behalf on this particular case saying the dealer offered to take the car back, and we have tons of precedents on this that if the dealer's willing to take it back, statute says it's like it never happened. So how can you charge them for something they didn't know? This goes back to that meeting that we did with where I said if it went from a salvage auction, we said it should be rebuilt, restored. Well, this is cementing that even further, because the bottom line is if it has a total loss, it says total loss history.
Yeah, that, so the charge under the fact that it wasn't disclosed properly, and the disclosure states that this disclosure statement must be given by the seller to the buyer every time the vehicle is knowingly resold with a salvage certificate or total loss history.
And we do not have a definition for total loss history.
Right.
The salvage part we do, we get all that. But just so you know, there, I had one that was in Davis County. This dealer made $30,000 on this vehicle transaction. Now, it was, I'm not kidding you, 30 grand. Would you like to make $30,000 on your crazy sale? So they bought this car out of Missouri knowing full well that it was a quote-unquote total loss. However, it had a clean title. And if you remember that scenario I brought up, so dealers know they don't care about the history. They want to know, is it a clean title? So this dealer bought it, fixed it, made 30 grand. This guy buys it in Utah, moves to Idaho. Idaho brands it because Idaho can do what they want. And he filed a complaint with us, and I screened it through the DMV, because just remember, 411A is the DMV section. It's not motor vehicle section. So myself, Larry, and Cole bring cases to them on issues, and they said no, that if it comes in on a clean title, we issue a clean title. And that's why, if you remember, through this board, that we got rid of cleaning titles. And we do not clean titles because of that argument. So I don't like some of the decisions we made, but there's nothing I can do about it right now. We need to be frank with you. It's going to be a lawsuit that's going to have to happen.
And it probably will be happening on this vehicle, because they're going to go after the DMV too.
It's one thing, man. You've got I've had a clean Carfax, the whole thing, and found out that it didn't. You're in the dark.
Well, and the statute is very clear too, that when it starts talking about it and that, but the code that they're charging under is it's at the time of application. Well, that's a clean title at the time of application, not a salvage.
Correct. Just so you know, what we find and through our investigations are different states have different philosophies. Like Utah requires a salvage certificate, which is a great process. Other states do not. Some states will circumvent it and have a title issued in the insurance company's name. That's a red flag to me. It's like, if you have a title insurance company's name, there's a reason for that. That's the projects that we're talking about another day. We're working on that. But those are the problems we're having. Now, if I wreck, Wayne knows way more about this than I do, but I'm telling you, this is the way I understand it. If a car gets wrecked and the insurance company acquires the title, they will not issue a salvage certificate until that vehicle has on the road. So NVIDIA sometimes falls behind that title work, and that causes us problems here.
It's delayed. Well, part of the other problem is who's determining that it is salvage, for example.
Correct.
Is it Carfax? Is it, you know, other types of service that provide that service? Because some of those I picked up, particularly on out of state, where a vehicle's been damaged in a wreck, it doesn't really necessarily go to the insurance company, but because it showed an insurance report, then is it branded or not branded? And it depends on the state what the answer is.
That's spot on, right?
And that comes to the whole problem of this is really a national issue, that if they can standardize the national salvage brand, which isn't going to happen, then it would solve the problem. It's not going to happen.
This problem is really a brand issue, because they're saying if an insurance company buys it,
Right.
The jargon they use is total loss.
Right.
So they'll put in the deed as total loss. That doesn't mean that it's going to get a rebuilt, restored title. That statute says total loss history. I don't know what that means, but the Utah County Attorney's Office now has decided they're going to prosecute me yet.
Is, where did they find the history?
Carfax.
So Carfax said that it was.
Carfax does say, it say it was this deed or does it use Carfax? And it, I think, was it two titles back?
Yeah.
It's two states back. It was branded, but it's been cleaned in two other states. And he wants us to, he tried to force us, the attorney, to.
The
attorney for the guy who bought the car wants DMV here to declare the total loss and brand it.
So they can.
And we told him that the only person that can do that is the insurance company. We are not going to do that. So he's threatened to sue DMV, and then now he's going to go after the car dealer for triple damages, even though the car dealer offered to buy the vehicle back. They won't let him buy it back.
So why the criminal? That's what we've asked.
Because it's in statute that way.
It's in statute that way. He said he knew, he sold the car, he should have known the history, and so the deed is in violation. What's that?
Did he know the history?
Well,
he said no.
To me, that's redundant because it's, like I said, we don't deal with it that way. Is it a clean title? That's all they have to ask.
Adam Jones, just one of the things that some of the dealers have been bringing up just lately is that even though they get a clean title, sometimes even the vehicle history with Carfax or others is showing clean when they go and do it. And then later on,
it's
they've been encouraged them to make sure that when they pull that report that it has a date on it, put it in file. So that there, now they've got some proof to show that when they pulled the report on this date, they got the vehicle showed as a clean title.
Well, that's
the title, but also the history report.
The other thing is like with salvage cars, as we know in the auctions too, like you could get. You know, depending on your title and how your title comes out on you, on some cars, depending on where that car was damaged and how it was damaged, you know, it's a process from the insurance, turns all that stuff in. So if the paperwork is building, right, and like we just said, there ain't enough hands to get this information in. This could be down the line before a car could even show up. So
keep in mind, you told me that was $5,000, right? $5,000. That's what I'm pretty sure it's $5,000.
Yeah.
So one of the cases we have out of Central Utah was this dealer didn't try to deceive anyone. They bought a hail damaged car, and it has a branded title, and
it has a clean title.
But it had a branded title when it came in.
Yeah, original.
Utah issued a clean title because we don't brand for hail, and this guy did repair it, so you can clearly see it looked like someone took a golf ball, went through a driving range, and did it all up. How do you not know that it's a hail damaged car? You clearly know it. They sell it to someone in Idaho. Idaho issues a brand. They file a complaint.
And that's the difference in state laws.
That's the difference in state laws.
That a structural damage. It's cosmetic damage. So should it be branded or not rebranded? That's the issue we have to deal with. Utah is hail damage. A structural damage issue to require a branded title. That's a problem in the statute.
The other factor is, let's say, Utah issues a clean title. The manufacturer will honor the warranty except for the body part. And as soon as you issue a rebuilt restore title in Idaho, the warranty's done.
Yep,
you're right. So you're kind of like going, like, yeah, is that the right thing? I mean, there's no intent to deceive here.
Right.
In a lot of cases, there's a lot of people in the salvage business that do everything right. They rebuild the car right, it's safe on the road, they replace everything. There's always going to be another guy, okay? And we catch that. But these statutes right now, that total loss history, that we need to change that. We need to get that.
There's no definition of what a total loss history is.
Okay. Well, and the question is, was it, I mean, Carfax says that with the car, in fact, you don't know if it was total loss.
Just well, yeah, like buying a rental car.
I mean, how many times does Carfax make them
self-insured?
Yeah, you just know that it was in an accident, maybe the insured paid on it or something, right?
Yeah.
Well, every state's really different, know what too. Yeah. It's the percentage of the ACV
right.
Versus what it is. I mean, Utah doesn't do that. We let the insurance companies decide. So, of course, they're going to pay low and sell high. That's what they do, right? Isn't that right? That's what I made IAL mad at me. They still forgive me for that, but it is what it is.
So Wayne is correct. We'll never have a national. Years ago, before, so Kirk is our NADA director. Before him, it was Nick Peterson. And I was on a joint NADA committee about salvage titles.
members.
Stephen. Oh, I'm sorry, Stephen. Oh, this goes back a long time. Yeah,
I'm sorry,
Stephen. So this goes back a long ways. And I was on a committee with Kent Peterson, and we were tackling this issue, and I was in NADA, and there was 12 or 15 people around this room, and they're talking about national satellite title and, you know, model legislation, etc. And I said in the meeting, this will never happen because you got 50 different states. Kent Peterson looked at me and goes, I said, so we need to stop this right now. Kent Peterson looked, you're my guy. You can't be doing that. And it's never got anywhere since.
And it's mostly about money. It's mostly about money because the state
does not
it
was the not chance adjustment. I'm getting old. There's no national fix for this.
Wayne Gleeman, and he's getting old. Let's go on to exciting topics.
Can I have one more?
Sure, please.
I'm sorry. One thing we need to talk about, and I know this is heading down the salvage side and everything that's going down on our road. Maybe we can talk about this off topic too, but something that we've always talked about in this group, but it's starting to be a bigger and bigger problem as months go on. And so, you know, we're starting to see this motorhome issue and these travel trailers.
Yeah.
I'm sitting down with, you know, the shredders and Western and Metro and all these guys, and you know that people are, we're getting these calls in our industry where, like, you know, can we just drop it off to you? And we won't deal with them. Even if they give them to us, we won't deal with them. It's not just the ability, and this is what we're talking with the guys from the shredder too. It's not just the ability of tearing off all the wood off these things, right? What we're finding out now is the amount of needles that are in these things that they're getting so hazardous to deal with. Right? So we can't solve that now in this room. Right?
It is like an asbestos problem.
Oh, it's worse. Yeah.
All the homeless are getting old trailers and motorhomes and living them in around the cities.
Yeah, and it's the problem is compounding like crazy, right? So on these motorhomes, we're getting more and more out there. Trailer houses are getting more, they're parked everywhere. That in theory, that the towing companies, like, they're losing a lot of money by no one wants to pick them up.
They can't get rid of them.
So now
there's no disposal
process. There's no disposal process at home.
So they go pick up one and no one will take it. So who owns them?
They're just abandoned. They're abandoned. Homeless use them and destroy
Clark Griswold.
Somebody owned it, right?
We got sick of it, so then they just walk on the side of the road.
So we need to figure out a way that we're going to be able to address this issue, right? How to dispose of it, because there's going to have to be dollars put out for it, right? And so I don't know how we're going to. I mean, I have an idea, right? And I think the idea should be either in licensing, right, or every time one is sold X amount of dollars, just put one aside in some type of fund, right, that could be generated to be pulled out. So they could be recycled. I know I'm going to.
That's like a tire recycling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
how much will it cost to dispose of each one?
So that's about. So I'm trying to figure out that number, right? Okay. And so the only way, and we were going to sit down with a group of us, even at the shredders, because you have to be able to make it fair, right? You got to be able to make it fair. How much somebody buys one for, and it's got to be based on footage, right? So my
weight,
footage or weight. I like the footage idea.
Process weight, because we met with Allison, was there. There's a guy in Salt Lake that does it for the law enforcement tows, and he says he loses money on taking those, but he gets it other ways. But he has to process that, has to take the wood out, he has to make sure the septic tanks are dealt with. I mean, he says I believe him. I really do. After he went into detail, I'm convinced he is losing money.
So it's like $1,000 per unit. Let's get together and talk.
Yeah, we'll talk about it after. I'm just saying it's something that we need to keep. The other thing we need to keep our eye on, we've talked about this before, is we're going to have a major problem with this EV battery situation. We can see it coming down like no tomorrow. It's one of those things that we need to get on our deck that we need to look at, right? Especially from a recycling side. I'm seeing it pile up more up and up as it goes. It's scaring me quite a bit.
and can see where the.
There's an article in Automotive News about batteries, the lithium ion batteries that are in those cars. They said if you were to take a radon detector, that everyone that's driving, and I'm not picking on Tesla, but everyone that's driving one, the whole body image and heat is red, the whole car.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
So I just think as a group that we all need to know about it. We need to figure out, you know, as our
way,
you know, what we need to do moving forward.
Yeah.
Legislation and all that. Let me just tell you that if I may, Stephen, so we're working on franchise stuff. And we met with Matt back for the last 6 months.
Right.
And so Jason and I and Herb and others have been involved.
We have a legislative committee at 12.20 does, et cetera.
And we're really close for really the first time in 25, 28 years to an agreement with the manufacturers.
Right.
The one part we don't have is on the EV battle. We can see there's a problem. They can see there's a problem. Now, it's not about recycling, but there's some other issues.
Yeah.
We can see that they can see that. We, none of us. And so the chief attorney from General Motors, he and I had a conversation last week. His comment to me, or no, it was David Pryor from the Alliance. He said, that I was stuck with Jeff Harris. He said, whoever gets this, they get bragging rights. And these people, we generally like this, they have no idea how to solve this problem. And we don't need it.
There's three house fires in northern Utah this last week. They're all by EVs. The house that went up in flames in Pleasant View was $2.5 million, and it went from their Tesla in their charging station in their house.
I had a house. My neighborhood burned to the ground too. Like one street away from mine, it's toast.
Well, from Florida.
Yeah, it'll really go up.
In theory, in my world, that's one sector of what could happen. So that's one sector.
It is.
The other sector, and we're working with other auto recyclers outside, is decommissioning these cars, right, to get these batteries out, because no one EV car is the same. It doesn't disconnect the same. So we're trying to get some awareness out there with the shredders and those guys. And so we're going to try to put an awareness here in the valley here, especially with the towing companies, fire department, because they have to deal with them, working on that level. But it's one of those things that I would love for us to.
We'll come up with the answer.
On your end, yeah. I mean, we were just talking to the heavy truck dealers, and they said that their manufacturers are going to require two technicians. One guy works on it. The other guy stands there with a two by. Not, I mean, I'm being facetious now, but stands there to pull the guy off if there's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're doing.
And on your end, that's super dangerous.
It totally is.
You're not going to have certified.
So everybody knows that the porters are, you know, we're recyclers. And we have now decided to turn the light. So
we had a guy come to Rotary a year ago, and he was a recycling guy. Maybe you and I talked about it, I'm not sure. But he presented this whole deal. They didn't know what to do. They honestly didn't know what to do. And he was a major guy. You would know his name. I don't remember who he is. But
no, I just, one of those things I just think as a board is moving forward and talking about the situation.
I definitely recommend you get
way in front of our
screen. That's Achilles heel.
I know.
You saw Ford and Epps are big trucks. Ford and Epps. Listen, next one is the one that's dear to your heart. Temporary prevent audit.
They're out now. They came out electronically. So the best thing to do, you should send it all. You can send out emails. Wayne, too. All you guys send emails. That it's in their best interest to call myself, Larry, or Cole, and go over their audits with them, because not only will save them money, but we'll also help them. We've already seen the fruits of our labor this year. The audits are way smaller. So if it's working, that's money the dealers can keep in their own pockets instead of paying us. So it's in their best interest to call us, and we will take the time and take care of their audits and go over with them.
90% of the penalty on that is laziness, and that's easy to fix. So.
Can I just say one thing on this? So come back to what we talked about first meeting at this meeting and keep this group where they are. Just from this discussion alone, I have counterparts in other states that don't have this kind of relationship, pro dealer business. And so we're just trying to keep this operation to the best we can. So back at the temporary permit, team. If we didn't have these folks in their teams, it would be awesome.
I think we need to applaud how they handle it. We need to give you another good round of kudos. We appreciate that. I know it's discussions before. Those that'll take it, look at it. You've worked with them. There's some of us just make the check, write the check, and it's a matter of doing.
They are.
And we appreciate your approach, and let us get the word out again with our people to do just my first note here. Go back and make sure that we're doing our part.
Joy does her part. Yeah, all
that,
the time.
That's really important that you guys understand that. So I will just talk about Kurt group, Steven's group, and Clint's group. You guys, in all fairness, are some of the best dealers in the state because we have your permit audits are nothing. But the stories that I've told you over time, getting the day after we did one training, the next day, I still have that check, I believe.
Yeah.
I got a check from a big dealer for $117,000. And it was just like, are you kidding me?
I knew the dealers.
And I went through with them and they ended up paying $3,500. Now, if you don't care about that kind of money, where all it was is giving us license plate information. That's it. They just paid it. So I know, I mean, Stevens is with the dealerships that he has. His like audits come in, there's like one or two on there.
And Joy's mad about it.
Yeah, she's mad about it. There's a lot of dealers that can't
come. I'll scratch my note out here.
Joy's great.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask one question too. In some of our meetings, I don't know how everybody feels, this is Chris Mann. It's something I'd like to see if we can add to it, our, you know, order of our meetings is be able to add in a line in as new business and old business in here. Right, because if there's something that one of us needs to bring in that's not on the agenda, right, at least we're able to bring it up in minutes.
No, we just sent out emails to everyone asking, and we didn't get any response back this time.
No, right? You don't. But what I'm saying is, when we're all fresh here and it's not on our minds at the time, it'd be great to have a line item as new business. Whether we can't vote on something, that's fine. But at least we're able to get
it. All right, stuff.
Yeah,
we'll take care of that.
Thank you.
Well, listen, we've had enough fun today.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody. This was great. Again, hats off to you and your staff, Alan. It's such a pleasure to work with you. You know, we got a lot of challenges, and we'll continue to have challenges. And with what's happening in the world right now today, you wonder what's next. So we just appreciate the fact that we can work collaboratively together and accomplish the tasks that we all want, so we can be better, both of us, at what we do. And we appreciate your support, and please continue to do I have anybody else that thinks we've done enough today that wants to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make the motion to re-adjourn today.
So appropriate. You second.
So stupid. I'm trying to make the motion. Oh, say the motion. Make the motion.
All right. All right.
I think Kurt wants to stay here longer.
Yeah.